right. Welcome once again to Parents of Ubusha. We're so happy to have with us here Elliot and Beauty, who are our guests today. And they are so gracious and kind to have a conversation with us. And I hope this is really insightful and useful to all our parents. So maybe let's kick it off by asking the big question attending to the pink elephant in the room. When we talk about sexual orientation, what are we talking about? Who are we talking about? And how do we go about talking about this? So maybe we'll kick it off with Elias, just helping us a bit to understand what we mean when we talk about sexual orientation.
Yeah. So I think for me, I always like breaking down these English words, because sometimes we complicate our understanding just from, you know, reading the word. But if you look at the word sexual orientation and you think about the last time you had orientation in your primary school days, you learned about life orientation. So it really is about how we orientate ourselves, how you do things. But in this instance, we're speaking about how you sexually orientate yourself. So how you then, you know, orientate yourself when it comes to the partners and the people that you show affection and you love. But if you think about the actual definition of sexual orientation, it says whom you are attracted to on an emotional, physical, you know, it encompasses who you love. This is someone you wake up, you know, next to. It's not necessarily just the person you're having sex with, but if you think about the two kids, a cat and a dog, and the picket fence in the ideal nuclear family, we are speaking really about the person that you're going to be sharing ice cream and spending your life with. So someone that you are emotionally attracted to, someone you're attracted to on all these different levels, but it's someone that you want to build a life with. So that's where we would define, you know, sexual orientation as. So we'll start there in terms of sexual orientation. But for me, I always want to then, you know, alert people that within sexual orientation, there's so much, you know, underlining that, because initially we'll speak about human sexuality in its completeness, because with sexual orientation, it does include the sex of the person, which is the biology, but it also includes the gender, which is, you know, the social, you know, constructing of how, you know, different communities, different cultures, different religions would then, you know, socially construct particular genders. And those varies. So when we speak about sexual orientation, we must be very cognizant of the entire human sexuality spectrum and how sexual orientation specifically fits into it. I think I find ourselves always, you know, contradicting the difference of sex, gender, sexual orientation, and sexual practices. Because sometimes sexual practices don't necessarily, you know, define sexual orientation. But I think what's important is for people to understand that, you know, when you speak about sexual orientation, you need to also understand human sexuality as a whole and all those elements that feed into sexual orientation. But for the benefit of people, it is really who you love emotionally, physically, who you are attracted to, who you are drawn towards to. But the simplest term is who you spend your life with. You know?
Yeah. Spot. Spot on.
Yeah. Beauty, do you have an extended thought? I see you're quite in agreement there.
No, totally. Like, he explained it so well. I was like, yeah, he did it. he hit it on the head. Like, yeah.
I love that so much. Thank you for clarifying for that. I think you actually added to our vocabulary as well, because then you mentioned sex and gender, and you also mentioned, I think it was, I don't know if it was sexual experience or was it sexual practices. That's the word. Can you help us understand what those different terminologies mean?
Great. So, I mean, usually when we do this exercise, I always tell people, draw a cross on a blank paper, put sex in the corner, put gender on the other one, and then sexual orientation, and then sexual practices, so that you can really see these boxes that we use to define our human sexuality. But what is important about these boxes is how we can flow through to them. So let's start with the first one. Most of the time when you look at the word sex, people will think about the sexual, you know, intercourse. But usually the homo first term when we say would say how you are born. So this is the biology of a person. This is the physical. No one usually has a choice on which sex they come to this
life. You're born with it.
But the term would say, you know, the bodies that we see in the world that we live in. And the norm is that you will have a male body and a female body. And these are characterized obviously by the physical attributes in terms of how we differ in terms of our sexual organs. But beyond that, we also think about the genetics, the XY, XX chromosomes. The hormones also play a major role in terms of how the two bodies differ. And we also have the hormones. I spoke about the hormones. So those are the characteristics that would then define the two bodies. But I think what people then miss in terms of these two binaries that we are, you know, usually we are more accustomed to, is that something that challenges the two bodies that we know, it's intersex, because this is also a natural body, a physical body of humans who come into this world, but they don't look like the usual ones that we are taught or that we know. And they challenge the idea that these are the only two bodies that exist in the world. So intersex people would then be, you know, an additional in terms of male, female, and then intersex when we just look at the biology of human beings coming to the world. And I think for me, that is a great basis to start off the conversation, because you start with how we come to life, and that's how we come to life. And then when we move to gender, then we can start saying how we feel personally about these bodies that we have ourselves. So in these two boxes, we literally are looking at how one understands who they are in relation to the body that they're in. So when you look at then the sex, I mean the gender or the gender of a person, we look at, you know, how in the society we are socialized and we are constructed. So we say the definition of gender is socially constructed, meaning no one wakes up in the morning. That newborn baby that's coming to be born today doesn't necessarily know their gender, because that wall is already painted pink.
Done.
That wall's already painted blue. So this is how, as society, we construct our children and, you know, these different bodies to socially, you know, behave and function in a particular way based on the sex that they are born in. So we will see for male bodies, you are taught to be more masculine, to be more strong and have quite masculine attributes. And when you are a female bodied person, then you are taught to be more effeminate, soft-spoken, mm-hmm. and have those attributes. But I think what is important is that as a person, you have your own gender identity, meaning it's how you personally feel. And then it's what we call how you present yourself to the world, which is gender presentation, based on the laws or the kind of family you come from. Not everyone is allowed to express their gender as freely as they can. And then there's the third one, which I call gender policing, which is all the grannies and the gogos that keep on reminding you to wear your hat, cover your shoulders. But we also have a societal aspect when it comes to gender. I'll make an example of that. You remember that ad that says real men don't drink pink drinks?
Yes.
So that's a great example of how we are socially constructing men to say you must drink bitter drinks. But if I don't like bitter drinks as a person, it doesn't make me less weak. So those are, you know, some examples when it comes to gender. And then gender is also so broad, because then it goes into transgender, which challenges the norm of just those two masculine and effeminate binaries are there. But when you look at transgender, then you're looking at people who are transitioning from one gender to another. But this is really personal. It's about Julie as a person or Elliot as a person identifying themselves in the world that they live around. And then when you go to the third box, then you go to sexual orientation, which is what we're discussing now. And this is where we now see the next person and how you relate to the other people, and you think about relationships. So this is where the relationships happen, and this is who you love. And when we think about sexual practices, we know that the sexual practices we do is not always with the people we love, right? So the practice part is really to understand all types of sexual practices that, you know, the human beings take form part in. And, you know, it's sex, some with meaning. For some people, it doesn't have meaning, but people have sex for different reasons. But when we look at sexual practices specifically, we are just literally looking at what kind of sexual practices people are participating in, and what does it mean for them. And then that's when we can really start summarizing our human sexuality altogether there. But I think with that, it is a lot of content. And I mean, for a parent, you are hearing all of these words, but I think for me, if you really start from the beginning to say you are born, you come into this world, you know, you are taught how to be a man, you are taught how to be a woman and how to behave, then you decide who you're going to be sharing your life with. And this is the person you'd be loving and that sexual orientation. And then after you find the one you love, then you start practicing, you know, sexual intercourse. And then that's where we can be able to see what kind of, you know, engagement then transpire. And then we use this model for a lot of our trainings with social workers, you know, people who work at clinics, whether it's nurses, the entire staff actually at the clinic is supposed to be able to be sensitized on human sexuality. And this is where we teach them so that it becomes an easier space. But for the work in health specifically, we look at sexual practices so that we understand how we can put barrier methods to the specific activities that are actually happening. Yeah. B, you want to add?
You want me to add? Yeah, and I just think, you know, this is a normal part of development if you think about it. So as I think, as a parent, I'm a parent myself. And it's really about just educating yourself, you know, finding the right information. Because when you hear this now to say that, oh, sexual practice, and I think about my 7-year-old son, I'm like, no! I don't want to hear it yet. But as somebody working in the space, you know, I understand the value of me understanding this so that when he does come to me with his questions, you know, I'm well informed. And that I also check myself as a parent as well before I now respond to my son to say, no, this is wrong. So I check myself to say, okay, maybe I'm not ready for this yet, you know, and pause it there. But then seek other avenues so that now I can give it to my son. Because if I am not going to give him the information, he's going to go out there and he's going to look for the information. And that is where we are having many, many problems, you know. Then now he gets ideas out there that are so, so, so wrong about sexual practices. And he thinks now he must go and practice sex. He doesn't understand it himself because I didn't understand it himself. And so that now is what we are in this chaos of, you know, high teenage pregnancy, et cetera, and gender-based violence because I was not able to give my son the information. So I have a boy shelter as a mother. I'm like, definitely, as parents, we do need to check ourselves and really just go out there, you know, and get more information on these things so that we can engage on these conversations and form a relationship with your son, you know, open communication. I feel that nowadays, because you are so scared, you don't have that relationship. So your child cannot just freely come to, you know, and talk about these things. And if there's no open communication relationship, I can tell you now, you are not going to know what your child is getting up to. And that is where things go wrong, horribly wrong. Yeah. It's what we are seeing today in our societies. We have all these crazy stats out there. And so, yeah.
I mean, they are. That's, I think maybe for you, Beauty, the word practice can be quite on the medical side. But another word you can, you know, cross-play is sexual play. Because a lot of times when people are, you know, practicing some of these activities or they're touching or they're trying to experience pleasure, we always say, we're just playing. So another word to use maybe that is
play.
You can say sexual play. I guess it's more conducive, especially for kids. Because if you think about kids and how they start exploring and experiencing, they'll just say we're playing. But in that play, there is touching. And we need to be able to then say these are the... So you're constantly touching your friend in this space, then you know that there is some, you know, pleasure and sexual element to those activities. And we can bring more light to them.
So that's, I want to piggyback off of that, you know. So there's, on the one hand, Elliot, you mentioned that, you know, part of what you guys do is also help health practitioners in the different designations to be able to respond to the various sexual orientations, people that present differently or, you know, the variety in that diversity as well, and to accommodate that in the health space. On the other hand, B is like, I have my hesitations as a parent and my anxieties, which I think really echoes the voice of a lot of our parents who are like, look, I'm aware. And I know I my ears are to the ground, so it's not like I'm not aware, but I just don't know how to go about this. Because on the one hand, there's the fear that I don't want to give my child ideas, right? Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it's like, but I also don't want my child to be ill-prepared. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it's like, I don't want something to happen to my child and they don't know that actually perhaps a boundary has been crossed, or that they've been violated in one way or another, or you know what I mean? And the reality of it is also that, especially with our adolescents, as they develop and as they grow, they also start to experiment. And that's a real thing. So I was just wondering from the two of you, perhaps you can give us a little bit of light. Maybe let's start with you, B, as a parent, and as a parent who your son is going to be a teen in like 6 years. Your little baby, he's not going to be a baby anymore. You know, before you know it, you're going to blink and he's going to be in high school. And I'm just wondering from you as a practitioner, as someone that's in the space, someone that has a sensitivity to everything that's going on, what are the resources that you are reading? What conversations are you having? Who are you asking advice from or questions to that perhaps our parents could benefit from? I mean, Elliot did mention, for instance, that, like, you know, with the nurses and so on and so on. But sometimes it's like, I think, you know, I know a couple of nurses, but I don't know if I can trust their, you know, feedback on certain things, you know. I'm curious about you as someone that's really in the thick of it, you know, as an expert, who are your experts?
I always say that nobody is an expert, right? I always say that, you know, especially with these topics, we are always evolving. Things are always moving. I mean, there's pronouns that we now have, you know. And so things are always moving, so nobody will always be an expert, but it's always good to consult people, you know, that work in this space, and so they'd be able to give you that knowledge. And as I said, as a parent, it starts with open communication between you and your son, adolescent, especially young people. So I'm an advocate for young people, and really about respecting their curiosity. Sometimes, you know, we might think if the person is asking what is heterosexual, you know, my child who is now 7 turning 8 and he would come, what is heterosexual, you know? Do I know that? And that the conversation is there. Don't just now say, no, you should know what this is. That's what you are. You know, that I now tell him there's heterosexual, there's asexual, there's, you know, all the kinds of sexual orientations that there is. So the open communication is very important for me. And as a person in the space, I think I've got the upper hand, or I've got the benefit, you know, that I'm engaged with a lot of development partners, you know, Unicosis, for example, that has brilliant programs, you know, around SRHR and orientation. They've got programs that deals with these things where they try and go into schools, you know, and they engage in conversations on a young person's level. So the language is age appropriate. It's not this big word that we always hear doctors and all these people talking about. So age appropriate language. So I'm exposed to that setting. So I'm a facilitator as well. So I am fortunate enough to be trained in these interventions. I'm sensitized by people like Elliot, you know, who talk to me about these various things. So for me, as a parent, I have that fortunate part that now I know these things, but now taking it back, so in my own home, having that conversation with my young child, you know, and respecting him, not laughing at him, and not now wanting, because I am a heterosexual now, he should also be a heterosexual, but then educating myself as well and understanding when he comes to me with a conversation, what he is asking, not dismissing him just immediately. So I think that's where it starts, and fostering that relationship, you know, with my son, but also always looking at people like, platforms like the Human, the Research Council, you know, Sonka Gender Justice. Those are people that are always posting articles, you know, where you can get help, where you can get support. If you as a parent, sometimes we really just do not know. And as a parent, we shouldn't feel bad if I do not know. Reach out to other people, you know, research it, join support groups, you know. And as a parent, if you're also not mentally there, how do you expect to help your child also to understand these various topics? So As a parent, I always say, look after yourself, educate yourself, equip yourself, get the tools on these various platforms and social media platforms that is available. Make sure, obviously, that it's a reputable source, guys. As a police, you don't go to these platforms where they teach us things. Make sure that no, this is the right thing. And yeah, that's just where I think that's the basis of what I would say, and communicate, and just your language as well. How you don't dismiss your child, that is sending them to a place where they should not go to.
Mm. Absolutely. Well, I think just to add on what Peter says, I think when you speak about the education that parents need and how important is that, I think we need to also acknowledge how our system is only starting now to trust that, you know, transforming and integrating sexuality and those teaching into foundation phase, and we are still working towards those policies and that framework and those guidelines to provide information for parents. But I think what I also like in the approach for the Department of Education is how they're also then now starting to think about SGPs. Where we not only want to teach your kids, but it is also important that in parents' meetings, all parents come in and understand what, you know, human sexuality is. Because I also think part of the backlash we sometimes get from parents about discussing, you know, such issues is because of the lack of information on their side. And really, for me, as far as teaching children is concerned, we must teach their parents, because they stay with their parents, they with them every day. They'll be instilling some of these values there and lessons and skills that we feel that are very paramount. So really, I focus on parents. It's quite a great angle in terms of teaching our kids. Julie also mentioned age appropriate. I think for me, for parents, I also want to acknowledge that age appropriate doesn't mean you mincing your word and not saying the right thing. You know, sex is always sex, the penis, the vagina, you know, it's really, because at the end of the day, they'll go out to a world where they will learn these words. I think for me, I'm the kind that even teaches you the wrong words not to say, so that you understand why you don't have to say those words and you are sensitized to them. Because sometimes if you just, you know, move around the wrong ones and you say, this is what you're supposed to say, we must be able, so that they also are able to correct their friends at school when they're having this conversation. So having a great, you know, access of friends, or using, even I see now our television and social media is becoming quite a great platform, but you need to make sure that it is information that is you know, approved. But shows like recent one on Showmax called Youngins is really pushing boundaries on how, you know, teenagers are engaging at school and identifying and expressing themselves. And it's a great way for conversation starters for parents who might not know what to say. And you are right. Some parents are shy. And if you are shy and you know that you're not as, you know, comprehensive in the language of starting the conversation with your parents, you can find, you know, someone, an aunt or someone that your child is more comfortable with, and then be able to start having that conversation. The other tip would be to have the conversation as a third person. So it's not directly to your child, but you are really saying, what would you do if this is? So those are great tactics to get, and children are more inquisitive on speaking about other people's issues than if they were directed to them. So, you know, so-and-so has a boyfriend. What do you think would have, you know, things like that really help in striking and really testing the waters for your child and finding a right approach. But with kids, definitely different strokes for different children, depending on the cultural and religious background they come from. But there's always a way of how you know your child better and you know how they'd be able to receive the information the best way. But for parents, I do encourage them that this is a very important part of parenting that you need to undergo, and make sure you do equip yourself with the skills and knowledge you need.
And I just wanted to add, you know, that because I always think that when we talk about these topics, people tend to think that, oh, we are talking about getting psychologists and all those, you know, things that are expensive. But I do want to say that this is also, you can go to your local clinic as well. You know, they tend to also offer workshops and talks and get information. I mean, there's many programs now with Innova Health, you know, where they are stationed at the clinics, WRHI, which is also like mobile clinics. So you can even approach them, check in your community and see who is in my community, you know, and talk to them about these things, just so that you as the parent, really, I feel that if we don't give them the information, that is where the problem starts. And we really as parents need to educate ourselves so that we can educate them. That is really a very important thing. So it's not a psychologist that you need to go in.
No.
If you have the money, you can go. Yes. But I'm just saying to our everyday parents, I mean, it's expensive.
Youth centers at Department of Health Clinic,
yes.
That would have a side youth center. You go there, you speak to whoever's managing the youth center, you'd be able to have the guidance. Social workers, there's these social homes for children,
yes,
where they have children that come back from school. Those are great spaces to find information in terms of how to ensure, you know, you have age appropriate information and how to deal with some of the issues that you might come in where your child is already acting out, some particular aspects, and you want to understand that and you want to be able to provide the guidance for and information for your child at that time. Yeah.
Thank you for that, both of you, actually. I think you touched on some of the, you've definitely assailed, I think, of some of the anxieties and hesitations around this topic for our parents that are listening, especially around knowing how to vet the information and knowing which sources one can look to, you know, because it can be overwhelming. I mean, if you just go and type our sexual orientation on Google, there's like billions and billions and billions of things that pop up, and you don't know what you should read and shouldn't read. You don't know what's giving you the right information, what's just someone's opinion. You know, you don't know how to work around that. So, I mean, and I think for a lot of parents also, I think in South Africa, we basically have the culture of, you know, you don't fix what's not broken. So if you're not sick, you're never at a healthcare facility, mm-hmm. you know, whereas, you know, those are actually educational spaces as well. They're not just curative spaces. So I think it's important to really emphasize that. And I'm so glad that both of you brought that up. And, you know, before I let you go, because you guys have been so great and so extensive in your responses, I think you really covered what I was really wondering about, and I think a lot of our parents are wondering about. Just two things. The first one is, you know, if there's a parent out here who's saying, look, I have a 15-year-old, I have a 14-year-old, and I'm picking up that there is some exploration that's happening, some experimentation that's happening, how do I start the conversation? And above and beyond that, how do I help my child to protect themselves in every way possible, physically, emotionally, sexually, and so on, without me either imposing a certain a certain orientation on them or whatever, but like really wanting to be a good parent that makes sure their child is safe and protected, but also at the same time is in a position to make decisions that are informed for their own good, especially because they are a minor and are underage, right? So do you have any thoughts on that as kind of the first part before we round up?
Non-judgmental.
I
think that is probably the first thing, like when she was saying, I heard everything, but like the first thing was like non-judgmental. It was just going off in my mind. You know, that as a parent, that we start of not judging your child. And 15 years old, that is like a very important phase of a young person's life. You know, I think that is sometimes you can either make or break a child at that age. And so non-judgmental, I can say it 10 times, like non-judgmental. And I think it also goes back to, you know, open communication. Do you have a relationship, first of all, with your child? Are you guys able to talk about things? If not, you need to first also fix that, because if you guys are not talking to each other, how are you even going to move? So the relationship and then communicating. And when your child comes, like sometimes just relax and listen. If you have nothing to say, then just listen. That's it. And then take it from there. I think that is where I would start off as a parent. But non-judgmental is very, very important for me. And creating a safe space. Mm-hmm. Do you in your home as well create a safe space? We always talk about safe space and people are like, what do you mean when you talk about a safe space, you know? Where the child feels comfortable enough. My mother always says, My mother doesn't like to hear shouting and all those things. And for her, that means that it's not a safe space when she hears shouting and things. So I'm just trying to make an example, you know. Does your child feel, okay, you know, this is my father. My father is not going to now because I cried, shout at me. I feel safe to cry in front of my father, even though I see my father as the superhero. So a safe space you need to create for your child, especially a 15-year-old child. That is the core of my heart.
Yeah.
Is adolescents and young people, hey? And respect their choices as well. And allow your child to make choices. Because sometimes I think that we don't allow our kids to make choices. Young people do need to make their own choices. It's because we, sometimes that is taken away, that young people are now saying young people are, we are Hayward or we are lost generation.
Yeah.
But our choice has been taken away. Let a young person know, as Elliot was saying, what are the options that I have available? What is heteronormity? What is asexual? What is a homosexual? Let me know those things and I then decide. But once you take that choice away from them and you dictate, you've got a 15-year-old now that can go to a facility if it's a girl. I mean, at 12 years old, you can go and get tested without your parents' consent. Yeah. So parents need to know what's out there within the world, you know, what the child can access without their parent. So if you want your child to go out there and do what they want to, then you are going to just, you know, not respect them. But if you want a child where you are going to raise up a child, you know, that is knowledgeable, that is informed, then you also just know what is going on and respect their choices, give them choices.
I think for me, the first thing I'll say that for a parent who's noting some sense of behavior or some, you know, some things in their child and they want to engage or try and have a conversation with, the first thing a parent should do is don't ignore. And I say that because I realize if you think about the high teenage pregnancy rates that we're seeing in our household, a lot of our parents ignore these signs. And just because you don't have the capacity to engage it, it doesn't mean you have to ignore it. And I think as a parent, you are a teacher. So we'll follow the teacher, you know, model of saying when you are a teacher, you must be a responsible one. And being a responsible one is knowing when to teach and not when to teach. And I think Billy also covered, you know, the essence of time. Is this an environment that is conducive for me to engage that? So you don't want to do it during a family meeting. You don't want to do it when everyone is there. You must then be able to assess yourself as a parent to say, I'm noting 1, 2, 3, 1, do I have all the information to engage? Am I ready? Is this the right space for me to then approach my child and start having the discussion? So those are very key. Am I ready? Do I have the information, you know, about what I want to discuss with my child? But also what's important is, you know, these behaviors, does it endanger the health of my child? I think it's very important. Is it activities with another person, or is it a child who's just trying to express themselves or saying things or using particular languages that you're noting? So it's very important. I mean, if it's engagements with another person, really immediately you need to intervene because you don't know how far those engagements are and exactly what they're doing. I mean, I stay with my 19-year-old younger brother, and because I'm so open about the communicating about sex, I realize he starts even being able to be comfortable speaking about it at the soccer field with the friends, and he comes back and asks me, they're saying 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, but because I've created just a great way of the back and forth, not only am I teaching him, I'm realizing now I'm teaching the entire soccer field because I'm constantly informing one person with so much information to a point where every time he has a girlfriend, we'll come introduce the girlfriend, this is my girlfriend. Do you think is it the right time to do self-tests or oral quick? And because he has all these information, he's very comfortable speaking about it and telling the girlfriend, "Guto, if we're going to start having sex, we have to know our status." Yes. And these are the, and I literally bring them and put them in the fridge now because I know he's 9:20 now. And, you know, he's in a way telling me that I'm being sexually active and now I need to make sure I start taking the measures. But if I was like, So that, the approach, how we respond, also met the relationship between the child and the parent is very important. And as a parent, you know, to you and your child don't get along that much, then I'd advise you to ask someone else where they'd be more comfortable in engaging in that discussion. And also looking at the violence that we see in families, yeah. A lot of times it's very close-knit people. Unfortunately, even the fathers and mothers abuse the children. So it's very important to also be aware of that dynamics in family household. And, you know, as a parent, I think the more resources you have, the better. But do not fear. And it's okay if you don't know.
Yeah.
Just because you're a parent doesn't mean you must know everything. And even in the space of sexual orientation and human sexuality, it is a behavior that is constantly being studied. Yeah. And as we speak, as we learn, as we do these conversations and these podcasts, we better understand how we behave sexually. Yeah. And I'm sure the language we use now in the next 10 years would have transformed completely. So it is a learning. Open yourself up, but also open yourself to unlearning a few things and learning a few new things that you knew back in the day. But yeah, seek for help, you know, ask.
Yeah.
Ask could help you. Don't die there and say, oh, I don't know what to do with this child.
Yeah. Oh gosh. And I mean, like, just to end, talking about sex doesn't mean your child is going to actually engage in sexual activity, guys. Or talking about these things doesn't mean tomorrow he's going to say, oh, mommy, mm-hmm. I am bisexual now. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got a different pronoun tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just about educating them about these things. And also so that you're not shocked when it comes, that you've already started the conversation, or when he sees it out there, he doesn't now, you know,
yeah.
Think, am I, you know, and I get stuck now. Mm-hmm. Am I a he? Am I a she? What mm-hmm. am I actually? They know exactly.
Yeah.
So I think, and also raising confident kids, you know, we want to raise confident kids that are not going to become another statistic, and then we've got another problem on our hands. But yeah, to parents, there are resources out there. I think it's really just about looking at them and going to them, go for counseling if you need to go for counseling as a parent first. If you feel like I only need counseling, go for counseling for yourself first, alone, go one-man show. And if then after that you feel that, okay, I can now include my son because there's no relationship between the two of us, then do that, you know. But as I said, they are very good developmental partners, your NACOSAs, your AFSAs, your Right to Care, your TB, HIV Care. You can even go onto the SANIC website and see who are some of the partners that SANIC is also doing with and what we are doing in this field. Is help out there. Don't sit and let yourself and your child die or get lost, if I should put it like that.
And we are building global citizen. As a parent, what you need to think about, I am bringing up a global citizen. I need to equip them with all the tools and the skills for them to function, especially when you're not there. Yeah.
That is such a valuable point, because, you know, as we already hammered for poor B earlier on, that her child isn't going to stay 7 forever. And it's so unfortunate, but it's so true. And I think it's so startling for parents, like especially when their children hit that adolescent age, to just think, where did the time go? And to think to themselves, you know, maybe I didn't prepare them, you know, I didn't spend the last 16 years preparing them for this time because I was secretly hoping it would never come, you know. But Elliot, I mean, I loved that point that don't ignore, you know, if you see something is definitely going on. With the smoke, there's definitely fire. Mm-hmm. And it is easier to ignore. It is the easier route, the most convenient route, because you know for sure you're avoiding conflict. You know for sure you're avoiding having to talk even about your own traumas, perhaps, you know, because those kinds of things come up, you know. You avoid also, you know, by ignoring, you also avoid exposing your kind of gaps in knowledge. But parents, they need to empower themselves. That's just the you know, that's just all there is to it. Because ultimately, they can't, unfortunately, they can't switch off the parent switch. so best to equip themselves so that they can show up the best way they can in that capacity. I know I said the second to last question, but I realized as well, you know, that there are additional concepts that we have now learned as well about the different types of sexual orientation. I think, B, you mentioned homosexuality, heterosexuality, asexuality. Can you help us just make sense of those and some others perhaps that we might not know for sure? And then we will jump right to the last question. Both of you, basically just please reflecting on anything else that you think is important for our parents to be aware of.
Okay, so Elite is the expert in this field, but I think beyond heterosexual, which is a male and a female, right, getting what we
opposite
know,
sex, yeah.
opposite sexes, there are several other orientations. So there's homosexual, bisexual, asexual, pansexual, and I think Elite, that's the way we are talking to each other.
Quick definitions would be heterosexual, which is what we are usually used to, means anyone who's attracted to the opposite sex. So if the sexes are opposite, that's what we say heterosexual is. Homosexual is same sex, male, male, female, female. Yeah. The usual terms, it's gay, lesbian. Bisexual is a person who has the ability to be attracted to both sexes, but we must not contradict and say at the same time. If you have more than one partner, you have multiple sexual partners. And bisexual means the ability to date Tabo, Cindy, Sipo, and then Lerato, and at different levels of your time. And then, what did you mention?
Asexual.
Asexual, some people are not interested in engaging in loving relationships with others, and they prefer not to participate. And those are people we would say they are asexual, and they don't want to, you know, define themselves, and they don't see any other person as attractive. I mean, a great example is a lot of people who get to older age, maybe after menopause. I'm not saying women after menopause don't have sex, but what is important is that you will see a lot of times when people start aging, there's less interest in sex specifically. But in companionship, there's still people who still grow old with their loving partners. So it's not always the case with everyone. Pansexual, I mean, a great way of explaining that is think about a pan. If you make an omelet, you put everything, but it's really people who don't look at one sexual orientation or gender or sex, but they really are in love with, you know, with who you are, regardless of the body and how you express yourself in this world. It's really about people who we are. That's why we say it's like an omelet. Anyone can come in for an enjoyable meal, but yeah, not in that sense, but it just broadens the spectrum of sexual orientation on those notes. Yeah.
Hey, thank you for clarifying. Yeah, that's really helpful. Because you know, you see also these words being thrown around in pop culture, as on social media, in magazines, you see them and you're just really very confused. You know, I've heard some people who are of age saying, you know, when I was growing up, you just had boys and girls. This thing now of yonke fonke zonke is just too much. So on that note, I mean, wonke zonke, do we have any final thoughts perhaps that our parents should really be cognizant of, be sensitive to? A final word on you guys in terms of really how our parents can be effective in really guiding our young people navigating sexual orientation and other issues that pertain to sexual and reproductive health.
I mean, from my side, I'm just noting from what you just said now, and I think what I tell parents is that in my experience as a black man in South Africa, I realize that a lot of times when we speak about sexual orientation and this subject, people think it's things that they've never seen before. And what I'd like to tell parents is that it's nothing new. We are making understanding of human behavior that existed for years.
Yeah.
We're just putting context into it. And as you, you know, learn this new language, you'll realize we are just putting meaning to behavior that already existed. And the more we understand, the better we can be able to make decisions, not only for teaching our own kids, but our own sexual orientation, how we function as human and sexual beings, and probably benefit more for themselves, if anything, you know, beyond just, you know, being able to provide assistance and direction for their children.
Yeah. And I also think, I just want to say, you know, it's difficult being a parent. Eh? We're always busy. We're navigating the platforms. Yes. But I also want to say to parents, you know, that this is a daunting, it feels like it's a daunting thing, but it's not. And that we must not forget ourselves as well, you know, find joy in other things as well, so that we can support our children. Because if we are not well ourselves, we can't support your child. So as a parent, take care of yourself as well. As Elliot said, your own sexual orientation, you know, be open
your
about that.
Sexual health, yeah.
And your own sexual and mental health that goes with it. Because, I mean, these conversations are sometimes very difficult because we were raised differently and from different communities, you know, and culture. It also impacts these conversations, and that has an impact on our mental health. So for parents, we do not know everything. Seek help, but take care of yourself so that you can support your child. That is also very important.
Absolutely. Knowledge is power. Yes. Back to basics.
That's it. That's it. And